Welcome in the back. For the first 29 years of my life, nobody was welcoming back because I was an active alcoholic and drug addict. But times have changed and the Lord does use us some unusual people and strange ways and where I'm on. So I want to do a quick review of last week and then jump into chapter 3 and chapter 4. There's a ton of There's a ton going on in these four chapters of Ruth. We could make a half-day seminar out of it and tie it in with a lot of New Testament scripture and so forth, but we don't have that much time, so we're going to try and do the Reader's Digest version. Last week, chapter 1, in the beginning says that in the days of the judges, Elimelech and Naomi took their two sons and they went to live in Moab. And what we learned about from the days of Judges, it was a miserable time for Israel. It was a time when everybody did what seemed right in their own eyes. So if it felt good, looked good, smelled good, tasted good, or sounded good, then I don't care what the cost is. But there was a high cost. If you look at the very end of the book of Judges, it's only about a 50-mile trip from Bethlehem to Moab. But in a few days, you could walk it. So I tied in also a little bit about Scott Peck's book, The Road Less Traveled, because this was a road less traveled both directions. And we'll talk more about the road back again today in chapter 3 and 4. Where Naomi was pleading with her two daughters-in-law, just stay, find husbands for yourself here with your own people and your own culture and everything you know. But and Orpha decided after encouraging to stay, Ruth said, I'm determined to go. Your God's going to be my God. If anything but death separates you and me, may God deal with me, be it ever so severely. So Ruth was determined to go on this road. And Ruth was going to leave everything. At least Naomi was going back to a town and culture that she knew something about. Ruth didn't know anything about. All she knew for sure was that the Israelites did not like the Moabites. And I'm going to go make a life there. So we talked about some personal reflection about loyalty and commitment and perseverance and those things, those character attributes that Ruth apparently was blessed with. After living with Naomi, she had to learn a lot about Jewish culture. So much so that the Jews read the book of Ruth on Shabbat. They believe that Ruth was a true Israelite. Her conversion was to Judaism by this profound statement and this move that she decided to make back with Naomi. That's why they, again, today, continue to read the book of Ruth out loud on Shabbat every year, every spring. As a little aside, there's a lot of resources for commentaries and study guides and pastors, research for sermons and so forth. And one that I found that was really, really good, I'll mention it to you, is the website. It's called studyandobey.com. Studyandobey.com. Lots of videos, lots of PDFs you can download. I mean, there's like 15 pages of notes on the book of Ruth. I mean, we just can't go through all that. But I'm trying to cherry pick what I think will be good for us. So we're going to start out in Ruth chapter 3. I'll read the first 6 verses, 1 through 6. One day, Naomi, her mother-in-law, said to her, my daughter, should I not try to find a home for you where you will be provided for? Is not Boaz, I'm going to back up just a second to a couple of verses at the end of chapter 2, because it sort of sets the stage. Chapter 2, verse 22. Naomi said to Ruth, her daughter-in-law, it will be good for you, my daughter, to go with the girls, because if someone else's field, you might be harmed. So Ruth stayed close to the servant girls of Boaz to glean until the barley and wheat harvests were finished, and she lived with her mother-in-law. Okay, so again, back in chapter 3, verse 1. One day, Naomi, her mother-in-law, said to her, "My daughter, shall I not try to find a home for you where you will be provided for? Is not Boaz, with whose your servant girls have been, a kinsman redeemer of ours? Tonight he will be winnowing barley and on the threshing floor. Wash and perfume yourself and put on your best clothes, then go down to the threshing floor. But don't let anyone know you're there until they've all finished eating and drinking. When he, Boaz, lies down, know where his place is lying. Then go and uncover his feet and lie down, and he will tell you what to do next." Verse 5. I will do whatever you say," Ruth answered. So she went down to the threshing floor and did everything her mother-in-law told her to do. Now, this is weird, right? I mean, this is just so, for us in the 21st century, this is some weird stuff. Now, you got to think, Naomi's plan to get Ruth married. Naomi comes up with a very odd and potentially dangerous plan, as we look at it today, for sure. We can't imagine telling our daughters to, "Hey, read the book of Ruth and go and do likewise." We're just not going to do that, right? That wouldn't work out in this day and age. But things were a lot different back then. Culture and faith and all these things were a lot different back then. So the big question that we're going to get into a little bit more in just a minute, but is this plan, is this an honorable one? Why or why not? Naomi wants to take, now Naomi starts to take the initiative. Instead of sitting around despairing at how horrible life is, she makes a plan to do something about the predicament they're in. So is this plan noble or nefarious? To us, it's just weird. There's something else weird as we get into chapter 4 that we'll talk about too. But her plans show implicit trust in Boaz and his character, believing him to be an honorable man, full of self-control. If Naomi had any doubts about Boaz's honor, it's unlikely she would have suggested such an encounter. Now, we can go back and look at in the first couple of chapters of how Boaz greeted his workers and so forth. "The Lord be with you, the Lord be with you too." And you know, it's a small town, Bethlehem. Word travels, people knew each other. And Boaz was known as an honorable man. It still sounds weird, but anyways, we'll get into that more in just a little bit. But some of the things that the way the Lord works, 2600, this is about 600 BC. And his approach to his people is still relevant today. If we look at, there's some verses in Titus chapter 2, where it says, "Older women likewise are to be reverent in behavior, not slanderers or slaves of much wine. They're to teach what is good, and so train the young women to love their husbands and children, to be self-controlled, pure, working at home, kind, and submissive to their husbands, that the word of God may not be reviled." So I've got a couple of study notes I'm going to read just a minute. But I'm going to jump into back to chapter 3, verse 7 through 15, starting in verse 7. "When Boaz had finished eating and drinking and was in good spirits, he went over to lie down at the far end of the grain pile. Ruth approached quietly, uncovered his feet. In the middle of the night, something startled the man, and he turned and discovered a woman lying at his feet. 'Who are you?' he asked. 'I'm your servant Ruth,' she said. 'Spread the corner of your garment over me, since you are a kinsman redeemer.' 'The Lord bless you, my daughter,' he replied. This kindness is greater than that which you have showed earlier. You have not run after younger men, whether rich or poor. And now, my daughter, don't be afraid. I will do for you all you ask. All my fellow townsmen know that you are a woman of noble character." Although it is true that I am a near kinsman, there is a kinsman redeemer that's even nearer than me. Stay here tonight, and in the morning, if he wants to redeem, good, let him redeem. If he is not willing, as surely as the Lord lives, I will do it. Lay here until morning. So she lay there at his feet until morning, but got up before anyone could be recognized, and he said, don't let it be known that a woman came to the threshing floor. He also said, bring me your shawl you are wearing and hold it out. When she did so, he poured 6 measures of barley into the shawl. Then he went back to town. So the big $64 billion question is right here in the end of verse, the Lord bless you, my daughter, verse 10, this kindness is greater. And now, my daughter, don't be afraid. I will do for you all you ask. I will do for you all you ask. What's she asking? This is a marriage proposal. She's made it clear that he is a kinsman redeemer. And he's not totally obligated, especially since she's a Moabite. But kinsman redeemers could redeem families, pay off debts, own their land and all that stuff. I mean, the Old Testament is loaded with rules and regulations about land transfers and all those things. But anyways, it's clear enough here for our purposes. But it's still, when you think of Naomi, tell her not, get your best clothes on, iron your blouse, get some perfume, go meet Boaz in the middle of the night. He'll tell you what to do. Just like a little bit shaky. But you know, right now, this weekend, Tiger Woods is going to play golf. And a few years ago, it was known that the greatest golfer in the world was black, and the greatest rap artist in the world was white. His name is Eminem. And I'm not into rap music. I love golf. I love to watch. And I'm not into rap music. But Eminem has had one song that was real popular from the movie made. And the lyrics of that song start out like this. Look, if you had one shot, one opportunity to seize everything you ever wanted in life, in one moment, would you capture it or let it slip? And that's the deal. Bruce has got one shot to make this great first impression and close the deal. And so look your best, be on your best behavior. He'll tell you what to do. Now, this laying the cloak over the feet and all this, where did this come from? Well, in the NIV study notes on verse 9, it says, spread the corner of your garment over me, a request for marriage. It comes from Ezekiel 16, verse 8. A similar custom is practiced in some parts of the Middle East even today. There's a play on words also for the word wings come up in verse chapter 2. But I'm going to read that verse from Ezekiel. And it's also interesting to note that Ezekiel was written about 600 BC, and they believe that Ruth was written about the same time or maybe a little later, which when we say later, it means earlier. Like instead of 600 BC, maybe 550 BC. So this Ezekiel prophecies would be sort of fresh in someone's mind 2,600 years ago. It goes like this. And Ezekiel is a prophet, we know, and much of what he wrote was like an allegory. And the definition, the fact is, at the top of Ezekiel 16, the title heading for that chapter is an allegory of unfaithful Jerusalem. Because Jerusalem was all over the place. And so it's about the Lord making his grace coming back to the nation of Israel. And at starting in verse, well, I'm just going to read this one verse. Ezekiel 16, verse 8 goes. The Lord had, I mean, first of all, in the first verses, he described the mess that Israel had gotten themselves into. And then he says in verse 8, later I passed by. When I looked at you, I saw that you were old enough for love. I spread the corner of my garment over you and covered your nakedness. I gave my solemn oath and entered into a covenant with you, declares the sovereign Lord, and you became mine. So this would have been fresh. Boaz understood what was going on this night in the middle of the night. She wasn't there to consummate the marriage. She was there to propose marriage. And you still may say, well, I don't know about that. But I've read multiple commentaries, and they're all saying the same thing. And they're all saying also that us in the 21st century, we struggle with this hot-looking woman in the middle of the night, you know, and I've been eating and drinking. I've got a couple glasses of wine in me, and I get woke up, and here's this girl, and, you know, what it comes natural. It's not what a surface reading doesn't do the job. All right, we're going to read Rebecca Ruth. So, since Ruth has made it clear what her intentions are at this middle of the night meeting, and there's a couple other reasons for this. Ruth could have confronted Boaz anywhere, on the street, in front of his crew, but she wanted to give Boaz an out, maybe, because rather than embarrass him or cause a fuss, he's got an option here. He knows there's a kinsman redeemer closer. He could bow out, you know, nicely and say, because a Jewish businessman to marry a young Moabite woman, most of the town's people are going to maybe look down on this. So just the same, we're going to start, I'm going to read the Ruth 3, 16 through 18. When Ruth came to her mother-in-law, she's coming back now with six measures of barley. And now, this is also curious because she held her shawl out. Six measures of barley, they say it weighs about 80 pounds. So she was no wallflower. I mean, she could carry 80 pounds of grain back to her mother-in-law. And now they've got food for months and months, no matter what happens. All right, so 16 through 18. When Ruth came to her mother-in-law, Naomi asked, "How'd it go, my daughter?" Then she told her everything Boaz had done and added, "He gave me six measures of barley. Don't go back to your mother-in-law empty." But Naomi said, "Wait, my daughter, until you find out what happens, for the man will not rest until the matter is settled." So a plan's in action, and Ruth and Naomi are going to wait and see how this thing goes. We're going to go back to Ruth chapter 4, verse 1. Meanwhile, Boaz went up to town, to the town gate, and sat there. When the kinsman redeemer he mentioned came along, Boaz said, "Come over here, my friend, and sit down." So he went over and sat down. Boaz took 10 elders of the town and said, "Sit here," and they did so. Then he said to the kinsman redeemer, and by the way, he doesn't have any name for this guy. This is like Mr. So-and-so. We get a lot of names in just a few minutes, but we don't know who this guy is. It's Mr. So-and-so. Then he said to the kinsman redeemer, "Naomi has come back from Moab, is selling a piece of land that belonged to our brother Amalek. I thought I should bring the matter to your attention and suggest that you buy it in the presence of these seated here and in presence of the elders of my people. If you will redeem it, do so. But if you will not, tell me, so I will know, for no one has the right to do it except you, and I'm the next in line." Okay, so Boaz's approach is the exact opposite of Ruth's. Ruth slips in the middle of life and brings the idea of, "Let's get married." Boaz goes into town. "I want 10 elders. I want it's noon at the city gate. I want a bunch of witnesses. I'm going to put this guy on the spot and see what he wants to do." So starting in verse, at the end of verse 4, that Mr. So-and-so says, "I will redeem it," he said. Then Boaz said, "On the day that you buy the land from Naomi and from Ruth, the Moabitess, you acquire the dead man's widow in order to maintain the name of the dead man with his property." At this, the kinsman redeemer said, "Well, wait a minute, then I can't redeem it because I might endanger my own estate. You redeem it yourself, I cannot do it." Verse 7. Now, in earlier times in Israel, for the redemption and transfer of property to become final, one party took off his sandal and gave it to the other. This was the method of legalizing transactions in Israel. So the kinsman redeemer said to Boaz, "Buy it yourself," and he removed his sandal. Okay, so, I mean, can you buy, like, 5 acres in Boulder County? I give you my sandal, I give you my word. Things were a lot different back then. These customs, we're just not, this just sounds weird to us. So, then in verse 9, then Boaz announced to the elders and all the people, "Today you are witnesses that I have bought from Naomi all the property of Amalek, her sons Chilion and Mahlon. I have also acquired the Ruth, the Moabitess, Mahlon's widow, as my wife, in order to maintain the name of the dead with his property, so that his name will not disappear from among his family and from the town records. Today you are witnesses." Verse 11. Then the elders and all those at the gate said, "We are witnesses. May the Lord make the woman who is coming into your home like Rachel or Leah, who together built up the house of Israel. May you have standing in Ephrathah and be famous in Bethlehem through the offspring the Lord gives you by this young woman. May your family be like that of Perez and Tamar, born to Judah." So the deal is finalized. Boaz is going to take Ruth, the Moabitess, to be his wife. And out of that, and I know I'm running out of time, I got a lot more to go, we're still just going to blast through it.
Keep rolling, man.
So Boaz in verse 13. Goes like this. And the heading for this is the genealogy of David. So Boaz took Ruth, and she became his wife. Then he entered into her, and the Lord enabled her to conceive, and she gave birth to a son. The women said to Naomi, "Praise be to the Lord, who this day has not left you without a kinsman redeemer." I'm going to stop here for just a second. When Naomi and Ruth left Moab, they were in the depths of despair. They had no idea what was going on, right? They were going to go back with their tail between their legs and try and make something happen in Bethlehem. She's already said that, "Ruth, you need to stay here with your own people. At least you got a shot at getting married. You come back with me, and good luck with that." But it's just another example of how the war works. With using, as Chuck Swindoll said, the surprise method. And this is quite a surprise. All right, so starting in verse 14. The women said to Naomi, "Praise be to the Lord, who this day has not left you without a kinsman redeemer. May he become famous throughout Israel. He will renew our life and sustain you in old age. For your daughter-in-law who loves you and is better to you than seven sons has given him birth. So not only have they both come back, not only have they found a way to glean in the field and at least feed themselves, now Naomi has got a grandson. And back then, there was no Social Security or SNAP cards or Section 8 housing allowances. I mean, it was up to the kids to take care of the old people. We've gotten away from that, obviously, but back then, this was a huge deal. This was like maxing out on Social Security for Naomi. All right, so starting over in verse 16. Then Naomi took the child, laid her in her lap, and cared for him. The women living there said, Naomi has a son, and they named him Obed. He was the father of Jesse, the father of David. This then is the family line of Perez. Perez was the father of Hezron, Hezron the father of Ram, Ram the father of Amadad, Amadad the father of Nashon, Nashon the father of Salmon, Salmon the father of Boaz, Boaz the father of Obed, Obed the father of Jesse, and Jesse the father of King David, the second king in Israel. And out of that comes, we're in Bethlehem right here, right? We're still in Bethlehem. We're back to Bethlehem today. We're talking about Bethlehem this morning. And Luke chapter 2, it's all being fulfilled right now. So some of the questions I would think to ask about this is, when Naomi and Elimelech and Mahlon and Chilion left Bethlehem to move to Moab, we asked in the very beginning last Friday, did they pray about it? I don't know if they prayed or not, but I think if they did, it was a very superficial prayer. Or, you know, where things are bad here, we need to go. It's okay with you. Let's pack up, honey. We're leaving. You know, I don't believe that they were really in the middle of God's will for Naomi and Elimelech and their two boys to move to Moab. And I think it's obvious because of the consequences of that poor choice. Three men died. And, you know, that's back then and even today, that would be kind of a typical of, you know, we made the wrong choice here. Something's not working right. But God, you know. See, Boaz was already in the family line. He's already in the ancestry line. What he needs is a wife. So the grandson, see, Boaz is a great-grandfather, and Ruth is the great-grandmother of King David. So Boaz is on the scene. Now, what if Naomi and Elimelech and the two boys had stayed in Bethlehem and just toughed it out and never gone to Moab? You think Boaz would have been single the rest of his life? I don't think so. I think the Lord would have found another wife for Boaz, and the thing would have still carried on the way it could have. But God is excellent at making lemonade out of lemons, right? And that's what happened with Ruth and with Elimelech and Naomi. I think that, now I can't get in the mind of God. All I can do is look at the circumstances around them. And I know that the Lord works in strange ways and wonders to perform. He likes to use the surprise method. You know, in the New Testament, I don't know if maybe telepathically Ruth got some New Testament scripture, but, you know, in James chapter 1, it says, count it all joy when you face trials of any kind, because, you know, the testing of your faith develops perseverance. Perseverance must finish its work so you will become mature and complete, lacking no good thing. Paul in Philippians says, rejoice in the Lord always. I say it again, rejoice. Let your gentleness be ever for all. The Lord is near. Don't be anxious about anything, but in everything by prayer and petition with thanksgiving, present your request to God, and the peace of God, which transcends all understanding, will guard your hearts and minds in Christ Jesus. So those are life verses for Ruth. I don't know where she got them, but I know the life verses for us today. So that's all I got. Thanks for having me.